Southern, old backwoods Southern lawyer. Cause the judge in the town's got bloodstains on his head.
Hey everybody, welcome to what I can only describe so far as an awkward reporting is eligible, but we'll stop doing that now and get to the actual football show. I'm Paul Noonan of Acme Pet Company, Shepherd Express. We just lost to the Falcons by one lousy, crappy, stupid point, and we're going to break down all of the various reasons why, because when you lose by 1 point, there are usually 100 reasons that you didn't get that extra point. So first, to help under the majestic bobblehead wall in urban Wauwatosa, we have...
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. One of those reasons is simply just, I don't know, calling a timeout when the play clock is going down in the first half, when your timeouts don't matter anyway.
All right, let's get to that in a second. I have to make an apology to Matt first, who is here and just doing shtick. So after last week's podcast, my dear brother sent me a bunch of medical research about how you can, in fact, reconnect an ACL without surgery in many instances through immobilization and rehab. So I was wrong about that. He sent me a very reputable New England Journal of Medicine, or linked me to it, or maybe I just found it. But yeah, you can do that. So sorry about that, and stand corrected on that particular medical issue.
Yeah. And I'm Matt, but you can call me Matub, and I owe you an apology.
Oh, yeah? For what?
And that WADA, USADA, and the NFL all banned the two major healing peptides last year.
There you go. Ahead of the game.
What's funny is WADA actually invented a new schedule just for BPC 157.
So a new category came out, and they jumped right to it and figured it out, and... Yep. All right.
Oh no, they invented the category for that compound.
All right. That's good. I will say the surgery is still generally recommended for high level athletes on the Achilles. The other method is generally reserved for people who aren't high level athletes. It does recur more frequently, but not a ton. And generally speaking, the outcomes were pretty equal. So yeah. Anyway, let's get to stupid Packer crap, because that's what people are paying us to do. So, and JR already brought up, like, why don't you call a timeout? Why don't you still try the field goal after it? Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's just idiotic. Like, he's already kicked a field goal longer than that, or at least close to as long as that. And I do not understand what happened there at all. Just brain freeze. Just, like, what was that? That's nonsense. I'm still mad.
Now, I do think it's fair to point out that at the end of the game, do the Falcons then kick the field goal? They don't, because they're down by 4 points or whatever. What they were down two, they would have been down five. So they end up going for they get the first down, because all they had to do was get a mere yard on fourth down, and the Packers front couldn't stop anybody. They scored the touchdown, and this doesn't matter.
That's true.
That's how I envision it happening. So it's not really the thing. But I said this to you in the aftermath, like, it's going to take some getting used to for Packers fans watching them play stupid, you know, and that's just, you know, like, they're going to get outskilled in many cases. This is, you know, while you go 1-1 on the road, and you have to feel good about that when everybody is new, pretty much, this is a game they should have won. It's against a lesser team. They should have been 2-0 on the road, and they didn't because they made just really stupid plays. It was the running back going down when all he had to do was keep his feet, and it was that call, and it was the defensive coordinator, and they were just like, that's unusual. It's usually because Aaron Rodgers tries to do something that he didn't need to do, or I don't know. It's just usually not this level of sort of let down.
This one made me madder because you're right. There's going to be a lot of sort of just lack of precision things with a young team. Like, not everybody's going to be on the same page. Everybody's got to learn, like, work habits and stuff like that. But the field goal bothers me because, so the penalty, whatever, that can be an on-field just dumb thing. You don't take the timeout. But Matt's decision after the fact, like, you can still kick that. There's no reason not to try a field goal there, in my opinion. You're inside, you're in the dome. Your kicker is allegedly very strong. So, like, that's a coaching mistake on top of young people mistakes.
To quote Paul Allen, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal.
This is not Detroit, man. Although Detroit also has a dome, and it would have been fine if it was.
This is not Detroit. This is the Superdome. Or wait, no, this is
Hey-o,
Mercedes-Benz.
We got it. Yep. Oh, shoot. Superdome's next week in a parallel universe. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's encouraging to see Anders Carlson actually. I mean, he kicked the ball very well. It looks like he's going to be fine. There's a lot of, I think Jordan Love is going to be fine, probably better than fine. Like, the questions that you have coming into the year, I think through two games have been kind of answered in a positive. And it's these little frustrated things, like, you know, the coach can call a timeout there. The coach can fix that. The coach can make the adjustment on, you know, Bijan Robinson. I mean, some of those plays he just cooked people, but some of them were wide open on fourth down. Like, what in the world? That's the stuff that's frustrating, because you know that they could have won that game probably 8 times out of 10.
Yep. Those are the ones that get you. I think I said on last week's show, like, I just don't like it. I like it when my team wins smart, and, you know, it just drives me crazy when dumb costs you the game. And, you know, inexperience is different, and I should probably make a case for, you know, a carve off of the inexperienced problems that happen once in a while, but that one still bothered me. All right, we should talk about the sneak, because mainly it was funny. We should talk about, because it's funny. I actually have a question
the
about
air quotes, hard air quotes.
So
sneak.
So much meme.
I have a question about this that I don't know the answer to. So, why did he dive over the pile when he didn't have the ball, right? Because if he had the ball, it would have been snapped, and it wouldn't.
He didn't have the ball, but so did you guys hear Jordan's post game?
I did not. What'd he say?
So he took full credit. He said that he forgot the word check to the. So like, he was expecting to, like, in one motion grab the ball and dive.
Okay, so my confusion is because he was basically going to take the ball from underneath center on his way over, and then it just never showed up.
Yes,
that's amazing. Uh-huh. Now I'm sad because
he was going to reverse Troy Polamalu himself.
Okay, that seems like maybe not the best idea. Anyway, it seems risky. Like, maybe it could have been a fumble. I don't know. But it looked hilarious. Just a guy crashing into the butts of his linemen for no reason whatsoever. It maybe prevented a fumble, but goodness gracious. At least he took credit, or it took the proper blame for it. So, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that was real dumb. I just thought he was losing his balance and was trying to hold up from, like, literally jumping on top of a dude and just ultimately kept stumbling his way through. Like, he had just committed to doing it, and dagnabbit, that body's going to just keep moving forward until it can't anymore.
I do have one other problem with it, and it is explained slightly by the fact that once the ball doesn't show up, you're going to be off your game a little bit. But if it was all in one motion, the fact that nobody else was moving, I feel like you should have gotten further. Like, I feel like he should have gotten all the way over the pile. Nobody was trying to stop him. Like, the fact that he barely picked up he didn't really gain a yard, despite nobody trying to actually prevent him from picking up a yard. It's concerning to me. That's all. I just wanted to throw that in.
AJ Dillon, Jordan Love handshake. You got to get more than a yard, kid.
We have lots of
AJ Dillon, Jordan Love handshake. Jordan Love holds out his hand. AJ Dillon falls on his face
and injures an offensive lineman upon doing so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
No, but it was the turf. It was the turf, Paul.
Oh, the turf got him. Yes. I mean, it's like shoving somebody out of a window and then blaming the ground for killing them. That's pretty much what happened there.
True.
Yeah. The best kind of correct.
I was going to say,
that's kind of correct.
I swear I have referenced this before. The Chatterbox radio channel on Grand Theft Auto 3. Have I referenced that to you guys before?
No.
Okay, so Grand Theft Auto 3, PlayStation 2, had a channel that was just supposed to be talk radio, and it was a bunch of comedians doing shtick. And this one guy calls in, and he goes, "It is a scientific fact that you can't die from bullets. You can die from cardiac arrest that may come on if you were penetrated by a bullet, but you were not killed by the bullet."
Okay.
And I feel like that is just,
yep, same thing.
Elton Jenkins' leg.
It is.
Right there.
Yeah. The problem is always our bodies failing in some way, shape, or form. If we jump out of an airplane, it's that our bodies could not maintain their mass. I mean, technically, it's the body's fault, I guess. Not strong enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's somebody's fault.
That's right.
And that body's,
right.
That body's AJ Dillon's.
I imagine if maybe Mason Crosby against Detroit when he had his famous meltdown. I'm trying to imagine a game where somebody has the least amount to do and fails worse than how AJ Dillon did in this game. Like it, they did not ask him to do a lot, and he did less than that because he also managed to injure a lineman unwittingly, of course. But like, I don't know, guys.
He's
that
just
was,
he's a big guy. He's like a 250-pound running back made of solid muscle, and he just has no balance or push at all. It's like just all wasted. It's hard to watch because it's cognitive dissonance. Like you see him crash into the line and expect people to move backwards, and instead he just falls down. It's insane. And yeah, he was awful in this game. 15 rushes for 55 yards is like the most AJ Dillon running back line of all time. Like if you don't stare too hard, maybe it looks kind of okay, but really he's getting like 3 yards a carry, and that's no good. So
he is a 3 yards in a cloud of dust superstar.
Ugh, God,
he would
so
be
bad.
Awesome in 1945.
And the main thing about it is like they win the game with average running 100%. Back. 100%. He just put him in bad down and distance repeatedly. He failed to get those crucial small yards. He hurt somebody. Like just random average guy wins this game. Doesn't need to be Aaron Jones. Just needs to be halfway competent. And they just don't get that from him enough. Then on the other side, you have like Bijan like being like freaking Batman out there, just making AJ look like he's running in molasses the whole game by comparison to really, really highlighted how bad he was.
Yeah. Brutal juxtaposition. I am curious if you like, don't they have to move on? I mean, you know that AJ Dillon is my guy. He's the priest of page views. But you know, we talked about running back. You know, part of the reason that you don't want to pay is because there's so many guys who can do basically the same types of things on the elite end and the bad end. Like you can't afford to have somebody who's just straight up bad at that job, because you can find somebody off of the street who can do it. So I don't know how much longer they can stick with him. I mean, the Jonathan Taylor stuff suddenly makes just way more sense.
Yeah, maybe they know. I don't know why they keep throwing him out there, but maybe they do know. But yeah, you should have a short leash on your running backs, because you can always find another one. I do wonder how much the second round status has kept him around, but it's almost over. Like, there's no reason not to throw somebody else out there and see how they do at this point. Last week, he was even a halfway decent pass blocker. This week, he was not. So he didn't even do that well. There wasn't even secret AJ stuff he did well. Just bad all around. Just a disaster. Mm-hmm. He did have one catch for 8 yards on a dump off, but like anybody could have done that. Literally anybody could have done that.
Yeah, but he caught it, though.
He did.
He caught it.
Okay, fine. He caught it.
So I was having this conversation with a coworker who's not a Packer fan, and he was like, you know, like, how do you replace Aaron Jones? And I was like, oh, you just draft him. Do you know where Aaron Jones was drafted?
Yeah.
Like, people round. Talk about Aaron Jones like he was like they talk about him like he was a top 10 pick. Like, no, you can find Aaron Jones in the fifth round.
Yeah.
Because we did.
There's one on the Jets practice squad right now, just waiting for somebody to grab him. So.
Oh, Zaza Zavavavan?
Yeah, that guy.
What's that guy's name?
I mean, I can't pronounce normal names. I'm not going to pronounce that name. Starts with an X. Valade is his last name, which is a fun last name. We should get him. But we have Patrick Taylor and Emmanuel Wilson. We could also just try one of those out. One of them is probably average. Both of them are probably average. Just do that. All right.
Man, this game is tough. Yeah. Also, Bijan Robinson. Are there things they could have done to stop him? Because he was really, really, really good. He ran through guys. He ran around guys. It did feel like at some point there maybe could have been something there, but I don't know. Like, so maybe he's just that good.
We should probably talk about how much of this was Joe Barry and how much of this was just the build of the team that Brian Gutekunst has put together. Because this is not a visual medium, as we say, and I have a Twitter picture up there that I didn't even bother to paste in of them being in a very wide three-man, very light front, and that's Joe Barry's fault. But also, like, there's no big heavy run stopper on this team. Like, they're pretty limited in being able to put out a run-stopping lineup. They don't really have it. Like, it's Slayton, and that's kind of it. And like there's so if somebody wants to run big power against you with a good offensive line, I don't think there's much Barry can honestly do about it, especially without sacrificing extra bodies. You know, most teams can stop the run by beefing up their front. I actually think the Packers kind of have to bring like safeties way up and dedicate more people to hitting holes to do it. And that exposes you to bad things down the field. So this game, I don't think Barry was great. I think he could have been a little bit more creative. But fundamentally, Atlanta just realized, like, we can just maul them. We're just bigger than they are. And that's what they did. And I don't know what they could have done that much differently. I mean, people were getting themselves out of position. People were getting run over. And there's not a bunch of 350-pounders to throw out there. So I think Goot deserves some blame for this one. And that Barry wasn't as bad as he's been catching flack for in this one.
Untrained eye tells me Desmond Ritter. Go ahead, Matt.
I'm sorry. I was say I blame Joel Seedman.
Okay, hot take of the week, guy. I mean, Enagbare is not a run stopper anyway, but feel free.
Yeah, but Enagbare, not the run stopper, had a clear shot at Ritter on two different read options.
And just whiffed.
And fell down or whiffed.
Yeah. By the way, to what Matt is referring,
he got blown off the line. Yeah,
if you didn't watch Hottest Take of the Week, JJ Enagbare over the offseason was working with a well-known quack, and that is the case. So that's the blame here.
Untrained eye also tells me that Desmond Ritter, or at least the Falcons in general, did a good job of figuring out how to address the pass rush. You know, he did get rid of the ball quickly, used his legs when he had to. Packers pass rush was really good. That's the trade-off of not being able to stop a running back to save your life. They could get to the quarterback, and they did, but that was the first half. And then in the second half, they found a way and obviously exploited, like, the famous, you know, Rashawn Gary being unable to set the edge on Ritter there to score that crucial touchdown. Yeah. I mean, but things melted down.
If you want to see the problem with Rashawn Gary, I think that's the play to show people.
He also tripped
right
Rasul Douglas.
poor Rasul. Maybe even would have made that tackle.
I mean, I think it goes without saying there's a huge indictment. The Falcons went for it on fourth down twice in that game when the game could have ended, and almost a third time. And I actually thought they were going to snap it the third time when they ended up kicking the game-winning field goal. They lined up on fourth down knowing that they could get the yards. And absolutely did get them.
Absolutely. It wasn't even close. If you do want to get into Barry a little bit in this game, the Packers did stay in their two safety shell for a good long time, and that's almost always a smart idea. The one time it's not is if you have a quarterback who can't really hurt you down the field except for trickery, and Ritter's got a bad arm. It's not really their game. They hit like two or three shot plays a game, usually on like the flea flicker type thing that they did, not a kind of a straight like nine ball. And so they maybe could have cheated the safeties up a little bit more and dared them to beat them deep. It's just even doing that, like Drake London was such a monster, just bodying Jair out there that I'm not sure that works either. so, yeah, just a tricky matchup for him, honestly. It's weird to run into a team that runs the ball 70% of the time and hits some of the Packers where they hurt. But that's what you got here, and they almost won anyway, so could be worse.
Where are we on how much we blame defensive players who can't catch the football? Because there were two instances that were pick sixes. Quay Walker, who did have a pick six last week, so, you know, one out of two. And Jair, of course. And who knows if they would have actually been pick sixes, but it sure looked like that was a possibility.
Yeah.
I've always maintained that we as a society are a little harder on those guys because the last thing they're expecting is for the ball to be in their breadbasket. And at the same time, it just looks optically so bad when they just don't hang on to those balls.
The Quay one looked really bad. Hit him right between the numbers. Like, and defensive players, job one is to stop.
Oh, no,
the
Quay one did not hit him in the numbers. Did you? The Quay one hit him in the face.
Face, whatever. Okay. Still,
it was no. If you take a screenshot of the Quay Walker drop, and you compare it to, let's say, a certain play from an NFC Championship game, it actually looks exactly the same.
Huh. All right.
Let's not do that. But I am waiting for the first interception to just stick in someone's face mask. That's going to be money.
Yeah.
But that was close. That one was like real close.
Nice. I do think you're right, JR, that their job is first to stop the ball, knock it down, whatever, and second to catch it. And, you know, if you're not expecting it, it's a lot harder. Receivers have the benefit of knowing the ball will be here at this time, and I've been working on catching it all day. And defense players have to read and react. It's totally different. You whip your head around, there's a ball there. So yeah, they should be cut a lot of slack. But, man, if it hits you in the face mask, you probably should have seen it coming.
Literally.
Yes.
And where are we on how we feel about David Bakhtiari not playing in this game?
Well.
I wish that I made as much money watching football as David Bakhtiari does.
I think we all do.
Can I just say front, I realize the popular sentiment and what's happening here. I am actually giving him the benefit of the doubt. I do think there's a very good possibility that he couldn't play this week because he just wasn't feeling, you know, his knee just sucked. And I think also if you're going into this game, if you go into the season expecting to sit him, let's say at some point five games this season, this one makes a lot of sense. Even you can even throw the turf in there, but like you should be able to beat Atlanta without him. Like, I don't even think.
So if he's hurt,
so JR,
if he's hurt,
JR, let me stop you both here.
Okay.
You guys know what his brother did, right?
I saw him.
Of course, we don't know what his brother did.
I know what he did. He tweeted a bad meme that was the F around and find out. Cryptic David Bakhtiari brother tweet.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Bakhtiari's brother essentially sold him out and all but said that he was sitting out on purpose by using a meme.
If that's your interpretation of the cryptic meme that his brother tweeted, then yes, that's correct.
But also that
allegedly,
would be so stupid.
I allegedly interpret it that way.
All right.
If he's who is he sticking it to? Is he sticking it to the NFL because the product is less? Because all you're doing is benefiting the teams that have the shitty turf.
That's correct. Yes,
they get to win a game because you didn't want to play on their field. Yeah. I mean, that's weird.
His team has grass and does things correctly. He is punishing his team that has the correct surface and incentivizing other people to have bad fields. So yes, he's definitely doing this wrong if that's the case. And Matt LaFleur,
he's not stupid. David Bakhtiari.
He's not. If he's actually hurt, LaFleur should have said, "Oh, Bakhtiari's knee is swollen up and he might not play this week." Instead of, "I'm not going to talk about it to Bakhtiari this week." That's not how you handle that situation if that's the case. So they're at least a little annoyed with him.
Well, while that is true, they are constantly fielding questions about David Bakhtiari's the process. He doesn't practice. It's a question every week. And after a bad loss, I can see him being like, oh, God, they're going to ask again about Bakhtiari and the turf thing, and I just don't want to deal with it. I am potentially going all naive on this. I'm giving them a little bit of the doubt.
Did you see that I figured out why he doesn't practice?
No. Why? Explain.
The Packers' indoor practice field, as well as their tiny field in the strength and conditioning area, both use field turf.
That's right. Yes, okay.
The exact same turf the Atlanta uses.
This is great conspiracy
theory fodder. That's
funny. That's funny, actually. Like, what
honestly,
if that's it?
I don't even care if he practices. He's good if he doesn't practice. Who cares? You don't want him to tear up his knee in practice, that's for sure.
I do want him to play, though.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I think we're going to find out one way or the other. You know, I think this is not the type of thing that will stay secret, quote unquote, secret for long.
Probably not.
I think he's talkative enough young man to, I say young man, he's not much. No, he's quite a bit younger than me. He's going to share this one way or the other. We're going to find out.
Well, it sucks that it has to go this way, but I do feel vindicated that I get to take a victory lap on that take. That I was the first person to make the correlation between field turf core and the two stadiums.
Matt,
and I said out loud, we might not see David Bakhtiari long before he ever hit the injury report.
Matt's salty because Zach Cruz did something very similar like 20 minutes after he did. So
mm-hmm. It wasn't 20 minutes after. It was a day after
whatever.
It just so happened to be 20 minutes after my tweet.
Yes. Fine.
I'm just
so
saying,
to be fair. Are you mad that he stole your idea, which. Fairness could have been in the ether anyway. We're mad that it took 24 hours for Zach Cruz to watch Hottest Take of the Week. Is that what you're upset about?
Actually, shout out to Zach Cruz who hit me in the DMs and was like, dude, I'm so sorry. I didn't see your tweet. Like, it totally looks like I ripped you off. And then the next day when he was listed as out, Cruz retweeted my take as opposed to his own.
Zach's good people, and I would not have expected him to.
Zach is good people.
That's far more charitable than he maybe needed to be.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
All right. Should we talk about some good things before we do our billion Patreon questions? Because there were good
things.
We
have a billion.
There were a lot of good things.
I really think Jordan Love is, he's better than I thought he was going to be. I think I said going into the year he's fine. He's better than fine. I really like him.
I like him too. He's better than I thought he would be too. A couple of little flaws. I have some still lingering worries. Like that deep ball is a little bit troubling. And
for sure.
I do wish he would, there's only been two games. I do wish there would be a game where he would complete 60% of his passes. That would make me happy. And he kind of did this week because they did have a couple of PI penalties.
And catch the ball, Dontavian Wicks. That thing is dropped into your beautiful, like just beautifully
good,
into your arms
defense
in the corner.
Good defense by Terrell as well. But yes, it would be nice if he fought for it a little harder. So
Can we talk about the discussion of late hands and how it relates to that catch?
I mean, you can mention it if you want, but I feel like it is
so
just like
Davante Adams.
That's well observed. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Davante Adams talks about a lot of his successes late hands and that he doesn't put his arms out to catch the ball until the last second. And Wicks had his hands out the whole time.
For sure.
Which gives the DB a good place to put his defending.
Absolute rookie behavior. Totally understandable. Absolutely.
I'm actually always a little surprised when you don't see that because you know what? Late hands is fun. Like if you're just playing catch, it's fun to wait till the last second to get your hands out there and snag the ball. Everybody should just do that as part of their routine. It makes catch way more fun than it otherwise is. Highly recommend late hands. That's good. But you're right. He should have fought harder for that. There are a couple questionable ones as well. Love is ranking poorly in a lot of like advanced accuracy metrics, but he also like is third or fourth in the league in depth of target. He's throwing the ball down the field. He's doing a lot of high leverage throws. And, you know, it's working. They hit big plays every game. They hit penalties every game. They've hit some big over-the-middle plays. So this is fine. This is so far sustainable as long as everybody keeps doing it. But I still like the easy ones to come a little easier. But, yeah, I totally agree. Like, he's looked way better than I expected him to. He is in great command of the offense. He still almost always makes the right read. Love what I've seen so far. He's been great.
And then there's Jaden Reed.
Yeah,
and your poor DMs.
Not too bad. I wrote like a thing after the fact, basically like, here's why I'm probably wrong about Jaden Reed, which, yeah, fine. That's true. I was right about Dontavian Wicks too, so that. But yeah, if you put Reed in the slot, which is where he plays 100% of the time, and alleviate some of the problems with his catch radius, it just, like, he's such a great athlete. He's so explosive with the ball in his hands. Like, you can work with that. He's going to be a good one. Yeah, I'm also sold on Reed.
I mean, this is one of those Michael David Smith things where, like, you're going to leave those tweets up.
But I also,
and you're going to get dunked on it for years.
I also wrote a bunch of stuff like, here's why I might be wrong about this pretty much right away. And then here's why I was wrong about this like 2 weeks later.
Let he who believed in Rashawn Gary from day one cast the first stone, I say.
Anyway, I'm fine. I'm fine owning that one. Also, like, this is an interesting receiver class. This is going to be one to study a little bit because a lot of the smalls this year are turning out to be much better than they have in the recent past, including some smalls who were drafted in the last 3 years. Like, Jordan Addison's been dynamite so far. Zay Flowers has been dynamite so far. And they were obviously very, very well regarded and, you know, went very high in the draft. But, like, Tutu Atwell is playing super well. Like, the tiniest man in the world is playing super well for the Rams. Smalls seem to be finding a bit of an advantage now. And some of the larger receivers seem to not be finding as big of an advantage now. So I think that's a trend worth keeping an eye on, too. And Reed is right in that trend and doing very, very well. So, small receiver, year of the small receiver is underway.
Well, unless you're a large receiver matched up with Jair Alexander,
then you can make some hay. That's true.
I mean, is it the body size thing, or is it like Jair just really looking like he doesn't care? Because those look like effort plays.
Well, they might be effort plays, but he has now, I think, a solid history of struggling against bigger receivers. And I think it might get into his head a little bit. And I think he likes to be physical. Like, he's a tiny guy who likes to be physical. And I think some of that doesn't work and makes him frustrated. So I think it's a little of both.
Royce Newman had a good game, guys.
He did. Kudos to him.
I regret to say.
Yeah. No pressures allowed. Stepped in. Played well. We should give credit where credit's due. We've ripped Royce a lot. When he has a good game, we should mention it. So he was excellent.
And you got a pick from Rasul. I mean, I really, the first half, I would have been like, defense is good. Like, yeah, Bijan's got his stuff, and they score right before the half. A shame they discovered Drake London is on the team. But, like, I would have thought this is going to be an okay defensive game. And then everything kind of fell apart in concert in the second half. But yeah.
As bad as Jair was, I think Rasul was almost equally good because he had the pick. He had Pitts a lot of the time, who had not a good game, and he did well with the physical Atlanta receivers. It was pick your poison on this one, but Rasul was legitimately good, and that's 2 weeks in a row where he's been good. So nice to see him coming back a little bit.
Yeah, I gotta say, I wasn't a big believer in Rasul Douglas sustaining it. I thought that first season with the Packers was based entirely on turnovers, a little bit of luck, a little bit of smoke and mirrors, he's sustained it, man.
Yeah, he has.
All right, we got to do the questions,
Let's
do anything else?
No, I think that's it. I mean, we play the Saints next week. They're going to be missing Jamal Williams and Alvin Kamara, and their offensive line blows. So it's the opposite of this game, and we should win it. But we'll talk about that on the mini pod on Friday, and the Saints aren't frankly not that interesting. So, yeah, we'll get to that.
All right, we're going to start. Thank you to all of our Patreons. A million questions this week, as you said. We'll start with Mark Podskarby. So to me, it seemed like Barry was doing what most fans wanted, in that he was taking Nixon or another player off the field to bring in an extra big guy to stop the run. So how much of our run defense failure is on Barry versus the execution of the players? What else could Barry have done to try to stop the run? We did kind of talk about this already.
We did, but I really think he was more or less correct on it. Like I said, he could have dared them to throw deep a little bit more, but the Atlanta passing game was working halfway decently by that point, and they just don't have big guys. So, I really think the run-stopping thing is more personnel. I'm guessing the Brewers just gave up a run by the look on JR's face.
No, I'm sorry. I'm already on the next question.
Gotcha. Okay.
No, the Brewers, Brewers are fine. Brewers are fine.
Good.
Carry on.
Okay. I think Barry's catching some strays here for Brian problems. I really think that's true. And they probably won't rear their heads again. Like, there's not really another Falcons out there or anybody on the schedule, at least. If they 49ers later, that might happen. But Atlanta's a weird team. Atlanta runs the ball way more than everybody else runs the ball. They're designed to run the ball. They're an old-school football team that plays defense and runs the ball. They shouldn't exist in this day and age. And the Packers just aren't equipped to deal with them. They're just not. They're a bunch of small defensive players. They're meant to play against pass offenses. So, yeah, this is a good game. It's not a Barry game.
Man, I went into this one to be really pissed off, but you're making it sound like just a lot of logical. It made it sound like maybe it was their destiny to lose this game. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, it's not a good matchup for them. The Packers have historically not done well against teams like this. If somebody's got a big power rushing attack, we haven't had a good run defense in ages. We'll get to that question later, I think. It's a bad matchup. Bad matchups happen.
To quickly go back to hottest take of the week, one thing Matub said by accident is referred to Jaden Reed as Jaren Reed on a touchdown pass. And I just want to be the first to say that I am here for any Jaren Reed catching touchdown content. If we can arrange for that.
That's my bad. I apologize.
No, that's quite all right. Just want to let you know that I was watching and delighted by the idea of a fat man catching the football and running down the field. I love that idea.
Heck yeah.
Jaden Reed built just a little differently than Jaren Reed. Tim Braun, if you received $5,000 in your PayPal account for someone's celebration of life and you had no idea what they were talking about, what would you do?
Okay, so I let me take this one.
Please do, because I don't know what he's talking about.
First what the off, fuck?
Okay, this is from the Discord lore. This happened in the Discord earlier this week.
That explains that.
Discord, Twitter, and commenter regular Jonathan Deal posted a screenshot of his PayPal where someone had sent him $5,000 for some old lady's funeral.
Oh my God.
And he was like, what the hell? And it was from like a state that he has never even stepped foot in. And so he's Googling. This was a several hours affair. So it turns out he has the exact same name and incredibly similar email address to the funeral director. And so they paid him for the funeral to someone with the same name.
Wow. Okay.
And you know what? But like, shout outs to him. He tracked down the real person, sent the money back to the person who sent it to him originally. No harm, no foul. And because it's PayPal friends and family, no money lost.
That's good.
So, John, great dude. What I would do is go, huh, that's weird, and then spend it.
So... Like, yeah,
you would not. Somebody is grieving. You would not do that, Matteo.
Really quick,
I'd be like, "Hey, Janet, I'm sorry that you died, but your grandson's a dumbass. Thanks for the money.
So what Jonathan did was the correct thing to do in this case because it was so much money. Everybody should be aware of the PayPal scam, though, if they're not, which is somebody sends you a bunch of money and then allegedly on accident and then asks you to send it back and then reports it as a poor transaction. And then PayPal will go and take it from you again. That is a common scam for somebody to get paid twice. And you don't want to fall for that. So do your due diligence if you run into PayPal mispayments. They can, in fact, be scammy on a somewhat regular basis.
Hmm. I mean, could you interpret that as somebody is pre-apologizing for murdering you and they want to let you know they feel
you
bad
could,
about it?
Good.
Here's $5K. You're dead later today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I don't know. I
hope I'm not killed by like the rhyming assassin.
Here's $5K. You're dead later today. I'll meet you on the street and you'll be laying at my feet. Donald Anderson says, sorry about the Hicks Wicks mix up last week. I
far be it from us to get on anybody for mispronouncing a name. So no harm done.
Yes. The Yo Schneiman family that we are. Sorry about the Hicks Wicks mix up. I think it was an autocorrect victim. In the spirit of industrial sites everywhere, this team has gone zero games since receiving a personal foul. Is there a statistical / analytics case for defensive players after deeper interceptions to just sit down and let the offense take over?
Absolutely not. And also, did they get flagged for a personal foul in this game? I didn't think they did. I checked. There's a face mask on Jonathan Owens for 15 yards, but that's different, isn't it?
Well, I mean, maybe he's just counting 15-yard penalties.
Okay,
and
I guess that is it is a personal foul, isn't it?
It is also a personal foul. All right, yes, all right. So there is one. It's that man is not a real safety.
No, he's not. Okay, but still, like no.
My content people are not it. It's fool's gold. It's fake
fool's
content.
Gold, yeah, you're gonna have to come up with some new ones.
Look, JR, what you need to realize is all of that is smoke and mirrors, and all you need is love.
Interception, especially a deep interception, you absolutely do not want to just go down and take a knee and let the offense take over. Usually you have a lot of space to operate, and usually you can gain a lot of easy yards by attempting some kind of return. And fumbles actually don't happen that often on returns. When they do, they stick out, they're high profile. Sometimes guys catch the ball and carry it in a stupid way, and that sticks in your head too. But by and large, you can get a lot of easy yards on returns. You're going against people who are not used to tackling, who are not going to keep their lanes.
Also, I'm sorry, I need to interrupt here.
Yeah.
The game that no one can ever stop talking about,
the stupid Seattle
contains
game, yeah.
An example of this,
it does,
where it went poorly for us because he sat down.
Yep. All true.
Why would you ever ask this?
No mas. Speaking of which, Julius Peppers is going to be in the Hall of Fame this year. I don't know if anybody is aware of that, but
do you think he's going to make first ballot?
Is that a serious question? Is there any debate that he won't?
I assumed he would.
Okay,
he's awesome.
Okay, okay.
Well, no, because he's going up against Josh Sitton and Jordy Nelson.
Oh, that's a good point. Good point. Yeah. He is one of, I don't remember who the other one is. That's like a surefire first ballot, but yeah, he's going in. PJ Wessel says one win, one loss. Two good examples of good offensive scheme though. Is it going better than it could have with Aaron? Yes. Because yeah. Aaron doesn't have a foot.
good answer. Even if Aaron played though, you wouldn't expect much more than this. You get three touchdowns out of your quarterback. It's not like Aaron was lighting people up with like 300-yard games last year either. And I think at best, you'd have gotten about the same level of performance and with injury risk, which obviously we've seen that, and decline, I think it's very likely that Love has outplayed what hypothetical Aaron would have done.
If I'm not mistaken, does Aaron Rodgers only have one three touchdown pass game last year?
I believe yes. That's correct.
He only had one last year.
And now Jordan Love has two in 2 weeks. Yeah. I mean, that is a cherry-picked statistic, but I enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, and one of them was a push pass, but it's not like Aaron never ran those, so.
Oh, no, for sure. Did those all the time. Aaron Jones caught a bunch of those, like not push passes per se, but little shuffles at the goal line, things yep. like that. Okay, Scarf 21, on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about the defense? Unlike the offense, the team invested so much into the defense, and it was largely healthy. While one can attribute offensive shortcomings to inexperience and pretty much a massive overhaul, with the defense, it is the same story every year, year in and year out. Even if Barry does have a short leash, would replacing him actually change anything? From Capers to Patton to now Barry, the defense has been an exercise in futility that has spanned for over a decade by now.
So this is the dumbest thing I'll say on this podcast, but I'm actually kind of optimistic about the defense going forward, only because this is like the biggest run team you're going to have this year. Like Atlanta really is designed to beat like the Gutekunst lineup / Barry coaching philosophy specifically. Like next week, if they have a bad game against New Orleans, then you can worry about the defense again because that's going to be a scheme problem. They're built to stop the Saints. They really are. And there's not a big rushing attack left here. Like, I don't like the Raiders if they get it together a little bit, but like, it's a bad year for running backs. You just played the best running team you're going to face by leaps and bounds. Everybody else is kind of bad. Like, maybe it's Saquon on the 11th, but he's behind a terrible offensive line.
He's dinged up too.
It's not to like December 11th, so he's got time to heal.
Yeah.
But like this schedule is not filled with good running backs and good rushing attacks. I guess they have Eckler, but he's always banged up. He's banged up right now. I know from my fantasy team, and that's still not a good running team. It's just he's a good scat back. So, I think they're well designed and pretty talented to face who they have to face, and I think they might be okay. You know, they've only played the Bears and the Falcons. We have very little sample for this. We have the trash offense of all trash offenses and super run offense. So maybe they're still going to be bad, but I kind of like how they're built for the rest of the season. So yeah, we'll see. Could be wrong. Barry, if Barry is consistent about anything, it's always letting you down, but, you know, we'll see. Could be okay. This might work.
Good transition to Case of the Sunday Berries. Today's performance made one thing clear. The Packers made a huge mistake letting Kurt Benkert go. They should immediately kick the tires on Kaepernick. No interest in either of them as a QB, but don't you think one of them could manage to teach Nixon to take a knee? Also, people sadly seem really upset about this game, so I'm going to clarify that this is a joke.
Uh-huh.
I kind of knew it was a joke.
Yes.
Okay, but seriously, Nixon was literally having to jump to catch the ball to keep it from going out the back of the end zone and then taking it from 9.5 yards deep. But, yeah. You know, I honestly think I would rather him risk potentially getting stopped at the 17 for the potential of him busting one wide.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have an all-pro kick returner and you never use him, you know, at some point you want to take the Ferrari out of the garage. But yep. he comes out of the garage a little too often, perhaps. But I don't know, man.
Yeah, maybe pick his spots a little bit better. But honestly, I'm kind of fine with him doing that. And if they have to start at the 20 instead of the 25 every once in a while, not that big a deal.
All right. Patrick Detmer, I haven't read A.J. Dillon's new book, Quadzilla Finds His Footing. When the setup has already got you laughing and you're not even at the punchline yet. But after watching the game yesterday, I can only assume the plot is about a plodding little dinosaur who loses his footing, falls on top of his friend, a giant brachiosaurus, and bruises his friend's MCL in the process. Quadzilla and his friends are now stuck playing with a far less imposing Tyrosaurus, and he must learn how to run over 1 yard marker lines without tripping over them and injuring his teammates. The question is this: can the title of a children's book repeatedly troll a fan base any more than this one has through 2 weeks of the season?
Nope.
Jeez, that is a good question.
It cannot.
The follow up sequel is actually going to be Quadzilla successfully trucks a linebacker.
Which he also did that. It should be pointed out that AJ Dillon did kill one man in this game, but he didn't. He needed those yards.
Yeah, he did.
Here we go. Old man on a bike in Shirlington. I'm an old man who rides a bike to and from work, so I understand Bakhtiari's desire to take a weekend off from physical activity. Granted, I'm not on a four-year, $92 million contract to play football on Sundays. But after witnessing Bakhtiari lash out at AstroTurf all week, I was not surprised when he came down with a case of don't-want-to-work-itis in Atlanta. Will Bakhtiari have a miraculous recovery next week in Green Bay? Will the coaches call Bakhtiari out on this AstroTurf if this AstroTurf illness pops up again this season? Or it is truancy?
I think he'll play next week. I don't think he'll miss the home opener if he can at all go. And I think this is going to be tricky for them to navigate because, if nothing else, Bakhtiari has plausible deniability. He can always claim his knee is acting up. He's been doing it for a couple of years, and for all we know, it does act up with some regularity. It seems like it was a bad injury and that it's never going to completely heal. It's bad, you'd like to be able to like call him out for it if he is, in fact, taking those off, but it's a tough place to be. Like, that gets really contentious. That gets into grievances. That gets into potentially arbitration, and that's messy, too.
Where I'm at is if he plays this week, then I am calling shenanigans.
Why?
He has to miss this. He has to miss this week. He has to miss a game on grass, or I am going to forever say that he sat out on purpose to be a whiny little baby boy.
I don't know. Like, I don't think this is enough sample size for that. Like,
that's where I'm at. I think after how much of a stink, and the other thing that bothers me is the lack of consistency in his stink. Last year, he specifically complained about slit film turf. This year, it's now all turf. And so pick one, first of all.
Well, I mean, maybe he's expanded.
Second of all,
I don't know.
No, specifically, like, he legitimately said turf is bad, but specifically slip film turf is the worst. We need to get rid of this. MetLife got rid of it and he still complained. Anyway, I just, the shenanigans of his brother, the way he acted all offseason, and then to go completely silent when he is a very loud person, I am forever going to say that this was sit out shenanigans.
We'll see.
If we get halfway
through
grass.
The season and he hasn't played on any of the turf fields coming up, then sure, I'm on board with that. But I don't know. I want to see more than that. That's all.
The question I ask here has an easy answer, but is it possible to just not be too concerned about David Bakhtiari because he's not going to be on the next good Packers team? And the answer, of course, is this team could easily make the playoffs. And even though we say that we're comfortable with it being a rebuilding year, or whatever, no one's actually comfortable with a rebuilding year. They want to still miraculously be a playoff team, a top flight team. So, and furthermore, you don't want your franchise quarterback to get hurt. You know, I say franchise a little bit in quotes, but not really. Like, if he gets hurt, that dramatically changes the trajectory of what this team does going forward next year and beyond. So I get that you want to have the best offensive lineman out there for sure. But, like, I'm not wrong, right? That if this plays out like everyone thinks it does, this team is not going to be a playoff team, or at least won't be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And David Bakhtiari is not going to be here next year, right?
Yes, that is almost certainly the case. But
Rashid Walker might be the left tackle next year. It's not so bad here.
Maybe. One thing that would be nice, though, is if they knew in advance enough that Rashid Walker could get first team reps at left tackle position and not having wasted them on Bakhtiari. If he's not going to, like,
but Bakhtiari didn't practice.
Oh,
he's not
true.
Getting any
point.
First
okay.
First team reps.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter fundamentally in the long run, other than, you know, that 0.001% chance they're actually a contender, which is not the case. So yeah, I guess that maybe the best strategy here is to just ignore him, but it's still kind of obnoxious. They do pay him quite a lot of money to play left tackle.
Right. Is he a Hall of Famer?
An NFL Hall of Famer?
Yes. No, he's a Packer Hall of Famer. Is he an NFL Hall of Famer?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I don't think he's got
longevity. There is an argument that he was the best offensive lineman for at least a year, maybe two, at his, you know, at his position in the NFL. There's an argument for that.
There is. I don't.
He's got, is it two or three All-Pros?
I think it's only two. It might be three.
Okay, I think. So his big draw was that he had more All Pros than Pro Bowls.
He is.
And I think that now that he's a name and now that he's loud, he's going to have Pro Bowls.
Yeah, he's got two AP1s and three AP2s and three Pro Bowls.
Oh, that's pretty good, actually.
Yeah,
the Pro Bowls are small. That's a small number. That is a big deal in Hall of Fame voting. But the All Pros.
But didn't he have two first team All Pros before he got a Pro Bowl?
No, not correct. He had Pro Bowl in 2016. First AP one was 2018. So.
What?
Yep.
I think he's a fringe case. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
So I don't think he is for longevity reasons, but he actually has a good 8 year. I think you could make an argument of peak value plus enough longevity. But for me, that's just a little bit short, and I wish he would have played a hair.
But
hair
that's
longer
the thing is
more dominant.
The moment that Terrell Davis was let in, I think the longevity argument goes out the window for everyone.
I mean,
oh man,
because you now have precedent for
you cannot compare positions in Hall of Fame voting in the NFL. And I know that you're very hung up on Terrell Davis. I agree he should not be in the Hall of Fame, but like it's not. There's 270 some dudes in there. There's no extrapolation. It's all very much case by case, and it's compared by era. There's no way that anyone's going to look at Terrell Davis and say, "Well, this guy only played four."
Terrell Davis was the best running back in football for 4 years, and then.
Yeah. Yeah,
disappeared.
That's right.
You don't have to argue that case with
David
me.
David Bakhtiari was the best left tackle in football for 7.
I hear what you're saying. I agree on Terrell Davis, but no one is extrapolating Terrell Davis to other players in the modern era
They're
of football.
Not.
No one is doing that, especially at different positions.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, they should.
Just because you're mad about it. I agree. He should not be in the Hall of Fame. Made Wiley. Second to last offensive drive, 3 straight runs with Dylan. Is that what actually lost us the game?
Yes.
Yes,
it is. It is, absolutely.
Yes. He sure did.
He's
not good.
It's bad. Dylan. It's Dylan failure. It's play calling failure. Like you run out the clock by getting first downs, not by running plays. And good God, like I think. But when you were watching the game in real time, did everyone assume that that was what was going to happen? Because it is what I thought was going to happen.
Yes, everyone absolutely. we knew exactly what was going to happen. It was a slow, painful death that took an hour and a half of watching failed A.J. Dillon runs.
I feel like
this reminded me of something, though.
Well, really quick. It was like, 5 yards. That's not a bad start. Maybe they'll get this. And then as soon as the 4-yard carry happened, it was like, damn it. That sucks. They're going to run him again. He's going to get stuffed, and we're going to punt. And yeah, that's exactly what happened, because if you get to 3rd and 1, it's the most predictable thing in the world, and it was horrible. So, yeah.
Yep. It's the John Kuhn dive, except less accurate. It's funny. So after he pushed that one pile for like 7 or 8 yards, I tweeted, AJ Dillon pushed a pile. It's a Christmas miracle. And then the next play, he got stuffed. So but this reminds me. The like, yes, it is your fault thing. So my wife is very interested in bootleg Packers merch, and she was looking at a shirt that was the Step Brothers portrait with AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones.
Oh yeah.
And this reminds me of the scene near the end of Step Brothers when they're like, are you guys getting divorced because of us? And then she's like, oh no, not. And then the dad goes, it is 150% your fault. You are the reason that this is happening. Like I want someone to say that to AJ.
I personally leave a little bit of blame on Wayne Larrabee's feet. I was not able to watch this game. I was driving children around on Sunday. Wayne Larrabee led me to believe that was a first down on back-to-back occasions. Both plays, he said, hey, he got the first down, or did he? Don't do that. That's a Bob Uecker thing. Like, it's a striker, is it? You know, like, no, don't do that to me. Because I felt in the moment, even driving around, like, I think, you know, they get the first down here. I think they might win. They got to sustain this drive. I certainly knew on fourth down or whichever third down, the second play that he missed. I certainly knew, like, if they don't get it here, it's bad, bad news. And then he didn't get it. So Wayne Larrabee.
But how great would it be for Wayne to be like, it's a first down. Actually, no, it's just a bit outside.
I haven't heard Uecker say that. That phrase in a long, long time. He has occasionally gone back to that well, but alas, he seems to just do the movies. JD, says, is it as simple as if Aaron Jones plays in this game, they win?
Yes.
I know there were other factors like the run D, but it seems like Jones out there more than Dylan makes this a W. Sub question, is Bakhtiari just done? LaFleur seemed quite frustrated in his postgame presser with the Bach questions, like he was over the whole situation. So we've talked about Bakhtiari. Yeah. I do think if Bakhtiari plays, they win. I do think if Aaron Jones plays, they win.
I agree with both of those. Absolutely. That is correct. They get just enough more juice out of Bakhtiari on the running and passing game to get that done. And if Jones plays, I think they wouldn't going away. Like, I think just his increased success rate and big playability and work in the passing game makes this, if not a rout, like a fairly comfortable victory. Jones makes a ton of difference in this if he plays. It's really too bad he missed it.
Yeah, in the passing game too. He's just so good.
Yes.
All right, Scott asks, even with dropped interceptions, top running back, wide receiver, two offensive linemen missing, and Newman said as on Sunfield. Oh, sorry about that. So anyway, to go backwards a little bit, two offensive line missing and Newman playing. The Falcons are a team with a good QB that a good QB should beat regardless. Were Love's shortcomings late a showing that perhaps he's only good with superb blocking, a bit of an inexperienced player choking, or something else? Can he sort it out so we can see him tear a tendon after being traded to the Jets 15 years like both his predecessors?
I mean, I think Love was fine. It's maybe not his forte to run the 45-second drill, which is what he was forced to do at the end. That is where maybe the precision passing does bite him a little bit, where he has to go to the sideline, he has to make tight window throws, and he has to pick up chunk yards on every player they run out of time, which, you know, is what would have happened. Worth noting, though, like, Samori Toure actually should have caught the fourth down pass, and I know there was an illegal formation penalty, but it shouldn't have been called. That nothing actually happened on that play. So, like, he actually did at least once put it where it needed to be to get a first down and keep things going. And he had nothing to do with it.
Did you see the end zone angle?
I did not.
Did you? Okay. The end zone angle of that throw is bananas. He is throwing at nothing.
Oh,
Toure
yeah,
is behind
yeah,
two defenders,
that, yeah.
And he knows he's going to break open. That was stupid good pass.
Yep. So Toure's got to catch that ball. It's basically drop might be a little harsh, but like catch the ball, man. And then like Love didn't have anything to do with the four Dylan runs in a row unless he called them, which I don't think he did. That's just bad play calling. So I don't think Love was much of a choker here. I really don't. And I think it's rough to say that first of all, the Falcons aren't that bad. They are actually projected by FTN, which is now Outsiders, to win their division. They're projected in preseason projections for 10.7 wins.
Really?
Yeah, they were super unlucky last year. Their defense is actually pretty good. It's not great, but it's pretty good in a bad division. And they're competent at everywhere but quarterback. Like Drake London's good, Kyle Pitts is good, offensive line is good, Bijan's good, Tyler Algier's good. It's just Desmond Ridder kind of sucks. But in the NFC South, that's actually enough for a pretty good projection. So it's not a bad team. It's not the Bears. Like they're competently put together. They run some pretty smart plays. They run some pretty smart defense and offense. So it's not just like you should roll over the Falcons. That's not the case at all. They're 2-0. And I really do think Love played pretty well and was let down by a lot of other people in this game.
Hey, Time 7 says, it looks like we let the Falcons offense play to their strength in the fourth quarter with runs outside the tackles. To which is this mostly attributable? A totally gassed defense, Barry's inability to take away the Falcons' strong suit, or a pair of slippery running backs?
All that stuff, and it is just their forte. And, you know, if you can run the ball behind a powered offensive line that's going to win their battles, there's not much a team can do to stop you if they don't have the horses to do it, and the Packers don't. So the Falcons just learned they could do it, and there's not a bunch of guys you can throw out there to stop them. It's really that. And Bijan's good, and their offensive line is good. They have a lot of good run blockers there. It is you can't stop somebody from running. You just can't. They can call running plays all day if that's what they want to do, and that's what they did. So
Bill Robbie says, I would trade Watson for Jonathan Taylor. Sub question. I would trade Watson and Dylan for Taylor plus X. What say you?
No.
He's saying basically, I would trade Dylan for nothing. Watson for Jonathan Taylor? Ugh.
I would not do that. Maybe I'll regret that if Watson is never healthy,
no.
But no.
That's a hard no for me, Doug.
Yeah, hard no.
Well, and that's probably part of the issue here is the frustration with Watson being unavailable a lot. This happened last year too.
Totally.
And it's starting to become a pretty serious trend with him, which, you know, maybe completely out of his control, but also.
Hey, be careful, JR.
Why?
If you say that too loud, his mom is going to be in your mentions.
Well, this isn't a tweet, so it's not happening.
But you
know, she's not listening this far into
Christian
the podcast.
Christian Watson's mom. Mom is eternal. She will show up at your house.
She heard us talking about peptides again in the first few minutes of this podcast, and she was like, "I can't do that
again." Out, yeah.
And she was gone, so I'm feeling okay.
So Jonathan Taylor is a good player, and he's only 24 years old, but you don't need to give up quality talent to get a running back replacement. You just don't. You have people at home who might be able to do it. You can get a bunch of guys who are cheap to do it. Aaron Jones is great. It's hard to replace him. But yeah, you don't need to give up a potentially great wide receiver.
You just reminded me of the we have X at home.
We have X at home. We don't have X at home, though. That's the thing.
We have Jonathan Taylor at home, and then it's a picture of A.J. Dillon falling down.
Jonathan Taylor would help, but you don't need to go all that way to get him. That's all.
Dutch Boy 5. I am both upset and not upset about this game. I'm not upset because I think this shows that we're still just an okay team, and that's what I was expecting this year. I am upset because I do think this game was still winnable. In most cases on the field, it appears that we have players, except at center and safety. But to me, our problems are more coaching. Unlike the Bears, who just don't have any players, I don't often feel that LaFleur outcoaches his opponent, but rather gets outcoached. What say you? Coaching problem or player problem?
I think in this game is dumb. They get outcoached a lot because Joe is not very good, and he does get out-schemed sometimes. But, like, I don't think Matt got out-schemed. I thought they called some dumb things, but, like, even that's AJ is a personnel problem. Like, you could not play him, of course. But that's the fundamental problem is he's not very good. But LaFleur's scheme worked pretty well. Like, they had some splash plays again in the offense. They got too conservative late. They got too conservative a couple times on short yardage, but maybe they were warranted in that. And I don't really think they got outcoached, and I don't really think Barry got that outcoached. He got a little outcoached, but I mean, the scheme I think has been pretty great this season so far, and responsible for a lot of their offensive success in both games. So not willing to go that far yet.
Tom Hates says, have the Packers had a good run defense in the last 20 years? I know this league is much more passing oriented, but it seems like every time we play a team with a decent running back, we get shredded.
Yeah. So 20 years, yes, because that goes back to 2003 and they did have good rush defenses.
Oh, great. Oh, great. The storied 2003 Packers.
Well, in 2010 and in 2009 and 2010, they had good run defenses. I believe they had a pretty good one in 2014 as well, even though it got absolutely shredded in the playoffs. I think that for the regular season it was. But by and large, no. You know, when they have, it's been outliers, and they do tend to construct themselves to be light and rushy and pass defensey and not run defensey. And they do tend to benefit a lot when they get the random Grady Jackson and Gilbert on their team. So there's lessons there. But yeah, it's a weakness. It's a thing. It's organizational philosophy at this point is to be bad against the run, and they could stand to be a little more versatile there.
Yeah, I just don't know in the modern NFL if you can be both outside of having an all-pro at every spot on the field, and you just can't do that with the salary cap. Like that's not feasible.
Let's just give up one crap safety for one big giant guy. That's all I really want.
Sure.
Just one. Just give me one. You can do that.
Well, they got plenty of safeties to offer. Yeah. Price Trozen, question prime. I'm going to be Johnny Optimist and ask you if you're like me and think the passing game is going to wreck fools this season, especially when Watson is back. A little more polish and it's really going to shine. Sub question, what lame 90s song will JR always turn up on the radio and sing along to? Mine is All For You by Sister Hazel, 1996. Do I need to answer that immediately?
First? Yeah, I assumed you're going
to. Well, I can. I mean, I
was Googling if something was in the 90s while you did that. So,
huge fan of The Freshman. I'll sing that anytime it's on. 1997, absolute jam. April of 97, very formative moment. I still kind of like Push by Matchbox 20, which has gotten a little bit of a bump thanks to the Barbie movie. and then, but the real answer is the other day it came on our way to church. Oh, It is like a direct portal to my childhood. I love it so much. It is a terrible song, and I love it with like every fiber of my non-ironic being. And that is One of Us by Joan Osborne. It is the lyrics are so bad.
Hear that now.
They're so bad, these lyrics. But the concept is interesting. And more importantly, this is a song that I heard on the school bus on the way home repeatedly back in 1994. I'm not sure, but that is my jam. I love it so much.
Yeah. They are going to, I think, be quite good when they get Watson back. It will increase completion percentage. It will increase everything. It will open people up. We can't wait to see it if it actually happens. I went and saw Guster.
Yeah,
I went and saw Guster this weekend, and there's some 2000s there, but mostly 90s. Not mostly 90s. Two out of three good albums, 90s. And they're right in my range for singing, so I belt those out. But my real answer is Steal My Sunshine by Len, which was released in 1999 and is a terrible song, but super fun to sing. So,
yeah, not a fan. One of Canada's rare.
Would you guys believe that my answer actually came on my Spotify playlist this morning?
Yes.
While I was driving to the plant.
Because it can read your mind.
Spotify totally can. So, the feature track from the 1995 Disney masterpiece, A Goofy Movie.
Well, that
as performed by Tevin Campbell.
Very good.
Well, I did not see this coming.
Eye to Eye.
Eye to Eye is great. I could see that.
Yeah. So, I will absolutely, the key change at the end of the song hits so hard. It's a banger.
I saw a study the other day that like key changes late in songs are like not a thing anymore. Like that it's like 1% of songs, and
it
used to be like 80% of songs, and that's sad. Key changes rule. Bring back key changes.
I agree with you. That's a very 90s thing or 80s thing, really.
Yeah.
And I think also you find, and this is not a surprise, but with the songs are beginning a lot more quickly. There's no intro. It's just like get to the lyrics because people are going to change the channel or it's an algorithm thing or spot, you know, like you have to get that song going immediately. So songs are starting right, you know, lyrics are hitting right away. And, you know, I like a good intro, you know, The Freshman by the Verve Pipe. I love that contemplative guitar.
So I guess my non-Disney movie answer would be 1997 Eagle Eye Cherry, Save Tonight.
There you go.
That's a good song.
I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
I did say, I believe I tweeted this out this past week, that I do believe Hey Soul Sister by Train has now achieved number one on my personal power rankings of worst song of all time. It is utterly unlistenable.
I am on board with that opinion. You are not wrong.
It previously,
I mean, any Train song that... Okay.
Go ahead. Any Train song.
I was going to say, any Train song that isn't Drops of Jupiter is not worth listening to.
Well, I personally disagree. I actually like some of Train's early catalog quite a bit. Very late 90s and then early 2000s. Big fan, actually. But Hey Soul Sister is an abomination. And it previously, the number one spot was held by She's So High by Tal Bachman. That's a 90s song.
She's so lovely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the worst song of all time for me for at least 20 years, maybe as many as 22. OMC's How Bizarre maybe briefly held that title.
Oh, that song's good. Come on.
Yeah, it's kitschy. It's kitschy. I'm into it.
I really feel like you're missing. No, the worst song of all time is the 90s techno remix of Cotton Eye Joe.
That is bad. I don't even know if that song like bothers me because it's so easy to dismiss. That's the thing, is like Hey Soul Sister sticks with you in a way that really makes me want to die. So it's, yeah, I can brush off a little Cotton Eye Joy. That's like a wedding thing. You hear it at a wedding. It's you roll your eyes
it's
and then
like
you sing
barely
along.
A song.
Yeah. 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 Agreed. I love our 90s rock diversions or 90s pop diversions, more like it. Jason Albert says, can the analytics community, Paul, you're in it. So you're getting indicted here. Please pick a lane on PFF grades.
You got it.
You, the royal you, use them when they're useful to bolster an argument, then ignore them and head to Twitter to complain to the manager when they don't. All statistical measures have limitations, but not all of them are good. Choose a side and have the courage of your convictions. Use or ignore. Which is it?
So PFF is bad, and they've actually gotten worse over the last year and a half, 2 years or so, for, I think, two reasons. They did some rescaling of their general grading, and it has led to far more bizarre grades than they used to have on a regular basis. It's been pretty annoying, honestly. I also think they're stretched too thin. They grade every college player now, and I don't think they have the people to do that. And even if they do, you're going to have the employee problem of the more people you have doing a task, the fewer people consistent. Are going to be really good at it, the more, less consistency you're going to have. And so I do think that their grades are generally a mess. The problem is it's hard to get a good idea about things like offensive line play at scale. So it's hard to completely ignore them, because if you need to say something about offensive line play, it's not that there's a better solution out there. It's it reflects the opinion of a guy who watched and graded offensive line play. And while it is subject to small sample size and that guy maybe being kind of a dumb guy, it's hard to get something better unless you know what you're looking at and have the time to go watch a bunch of offensive line play. So, yeah, for quarterbacks and running backs.
So did you see?
Did I see what?
Well, did you see the job posting that was going around last year?
Not last year, but no. Why?
So last year, also, by the way, I apologize for my delay. The DSL in Kansahoma is awful. So I am a full like 2 seconds behind you. That's why I've been terrible the whole podcast. So that there was a Pro Football Focus job posting that was going around through Glassdoor, where they were looking for NFL film graders at their call center in India.
Ah, okay.
And they were looking for soccer. They were looking for soccer fans that they could teach football. They were like, you must understand football and we will teach you gridiron football. So you are literally reaching out to call center employees that you are going to teach football to grade your offensive line play.
Got it. There's
it's not going to go well.
There's another problem, too. Last year, Eric Eager left PFF, and I think he was responsible for enforcing a lot of their analytical rigor. To the extent that they had any, you know, he was always the one working on warp and positional value and cared, you know, pretty deeply about getting the nuances of things right. With him not there, I could see them getting lax with how they do things too. So a lot going on there. And honestly, you probably shouldn't, if there's anything better available, trust that. It's just, they do cover a few things that are hard to get information on otherwise.
Ryan Ziegler says, I deleted my original question. Aaron Rodgers saw ghosts over the middle of the field. Is Bakhtiari actually afraid the turf monster is going to get him?
Kind of, yes. It'd be a good movie. Somebody should make that movie.
The Turf Monster. Flaley Joel Osmond asks, is team good?
I think they're pretty good.
is a Discord-ass comment from Flaley Joel Osmond.
Nicely done. Team good. Yeah. I mean,
you can't
answer it more than that. It ricks the question if you do.
That's true. Team good. You're either a smart fella or a fart smella. Are there any of you as irrationally stuck on the suggestion that apparently 56 yards indoors is too far of a kick to attempt? Is this simply an effort to ease the rookie Carlson into things without making him take very difficult kicks that he may miss early on in the name of confidence building? Did LaFleur forget that we let Crosby go? Otherwise, why else would a 56-yard kick indoors be too far to try for a professional kicker? Wasn't the whole issue with Crosby, other than salary, his leg strength, and ostensibly why we needed to get younger? We didn't really hit on that, but like, yeah, 56 yarder should have been something Anders Carlson could do.
Yeah. And that is why you have him. If you have him, is to make kicks like that. So, yes, I think if you asked LaFleur to get and he got an honest answer, he'd say it was early in the game. And if he does miss, then you give a lot of field position away on that very, very long miss and give Atlanta a very short field. And, you know, it wasn't desperate times, desperate measures yet. It was the first drive of the game. You don't want to necessarily give Atlanta their first possession or whatever, second, whatever it was, you know, basically at midfield, which is kind of where that lands you. So there's that. But also, like, kickers are making longer kicks more routinely than they ever have before. The like, average and longest kick distances over the last 2 years in the NFL are much higher than they've been at any other time. And, you know, 52 used to be the absolute outside for kickers where you would even try these things. But people make 56 to 60 with some routine now. So, yeah, that's kind of a cowardly thing that happened. And they definitely should have tried a field goal there. That is in range inside 100%. You got to trust a guy to do that.
J. Jeremy Moan says, why is PFF so down on Love? This is ties into our earlier question. For that matter, so off on a lot of other grades, cough AJ Dillon. I've seen some justification in tweet threads this week, but I want to hear from y'all. Why is it that the Packers analytics people I follow, whom I know would not shy away from bashing him, seem to be very positive on his production while PFF is not? Sub question, Milio's or Potbelly?
I've never had Milio's, is it? So Potbelly, anybody else?
Big Potbelly guy.
All right. Matt?
I have no idea what either of those things are.
Okay. They're sub-sandwich chains. I Milio's, I assume, is the same, right?
So literally, sub-question.
Yeah, indeed.
That's very tough.
Jeremy.
Oh, God, Joe Grenade.
Jeremy, good work. Well done. Good question.
Joe Grenade. That one, he threw it. We waited for it. Yep. And it finally went off.
All right. I can answer the PFF question because I wrote one of those tweet threads. And I can tell you exactly what it is. This is a problem of this is the on-base percentage problem. And it is when they grade plays at PFF, they have essentially like a 4 points, 5 point, whatever. It's -2 to 2 per play. If it's super good, you get a 2. If it's super bad, you get a -2. If it's even, you get a 0. That's kind of how it works. And so if you're Jordan Love and you've created most of your value, and by the way, he's first in EPA per play in the NFL right now for quarterbacks. If you create a lot of value on just big plays, but aren't successful on a lot of little plays, you're basically going to be capped at 2 on your big plays. You're going to get, oh, he had a 45-yard pass interference penalty. That's a 2. Okay, he missed a 1-yard pass. That's a -1. And you start to see the problem really quickly, how this adds up on PFF grades. Like, if you miss a bunch of, like, little tiny passes where you were going to gain a yard and now you've gained 0 and it doesn't matter that much because you might hit a 50-yarder down the line, it's not going to add up to a positive grade a lot of the time. And maybe PFF will end up being right, and Love will stop getting the benefit of those big plays if those start falling incomplete. But I kind of don't think so. I think this is a problem of they don't grade properly to account for sort of gunslingers, big play artists. They're really designed for consistent quarterback play and really consistent play across the board. They have actually a very similar problem that is less obvious on defensive players who make big splash plays with some routine, like interceptions and big sacks, and maybe slough off a little bit once in a while on sort of the basic plays where it doesn't matter as much. It's a general PFF problem. It's just really showing up with Love, because he's such an extreme gunslinger player. So it's sort of a function of, I call it the OBP problem, because like on base percentage in baseball treats a walk the same as a home run. Like, either you made an out or you didn't. And it's not quite that, because it's not so binary, but it's that there's not enough scale range to account for really good plays. So there you go. That's why they're down on him.
Jeremy Nachman with our last question of the night. And Matub, this one is probably for you. What is the deal with modern turf? Is it unsafe or less safe than well-managed natural grass? On the one side, you have David Bakhtiari and World Soccer claiming it's unsafe. And on the other, you have the WIAA requiring all level 4 football games to be played on turf in the name of safety. But is it really just avoiding the recurring costs of grass maintenance? Turf grass maintenance. Before you get started, I would throw in the WIAA has a little bit different thing. I mean, first of all, the level of ability maintained at high school football fields is probably not quite as good as it is in college or the NFL. So you're playing on some slick, gross, muddied up surfaces if you're playing on grass versus turf. That's all I want to throw in. Go ahead, Mattel.
Okay, so I looked into the turf argument a lot the last few weeks.
Me too.
And so yes, the statistics support non-contact injuries happening with less frequency on natural grass.
Yep.
However, they are still at very similar rates. You are looking at a difference of, I think it was 0.0005 per 1,000 incidents, or per 1,000 reps, in terms of a difference. One was like the last 2 years was 0.0048 versus 0.0043. And there have been a lot of studies done on the modern versions of turf. Actually, very specifically, the reason I looked into this is because of the field turf court, the one that Aaron Rodgers just got hurt on, the one that Atlanta uses, is very popular in the high school's field. And there were multiple several year studies done on field turf core specifically versus grass. And they found no significant difference in non-contact injuries between high school grass and high school turf. But they said that the types of non-contact injuries were different between the two. So look, man, football is a dangerous sport. You are scrambling your brain every time you step out on the field. And so this kind of gets lost in the minutiae of the overall danger of the sport. And I am a very pro labor person. And this whole argument kind of sucks for me because it makes me anti labor. And that it's like you have signed up for the quote unquote gladiator sport. The risks are associated with it. Maybe just go out and play and you'll run the risk of blowing out your knee. I'm sorry.
So I read a lot about it too, and Matt's essentially correct. It's hard to do good studies on the topic because it's hard to get your sample really definitively there. It's hard to get a count of how many people practice routinely on both kinds of surfaces versus how many people incur injuries on those surfaces, especially at lower levels of football. But by and large, Matt's right. It does look like grass is generally safer. At higher levels, it shows up a little bit more. Turf definitely does cause more, especially ankle and knee injuries. But the types of injuries do vary, and grass actually appears to be worse, kind of counterintuitively. I can't actually explain it, but for concussions. It looks like concussions have been more common on grass fields than turf fields, which I do not get. I feel like turf is harder generally than grass, but you know, grass is also inconsistent. When it's cold out, grass is very hard, and there's other things that can happen to change the consistency of a dirt and grass field. So it looks generally like the players' union is correct, especially on soft tissue injuries, but it's not as cut and dry as everybody's making it out to be.
Hmm. What about the idea that players just simply prefer grass? Like they say, whether this is, you know, like sort of just, I don't know how true this is, but they feel like they are more sore the day after playing on turf versus grass. They feel like grass is just a more comfortable experience.
There are two main camps if they have an opinion on grass versus turf and it's not injury related, it could be separated on their 40 time. Guys that run 4.3s prefer turf. Guys that don't prefer grass.
Sure. Like, no, that makes sense.
Like, I do think that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think the player's opinion should be taken seriously, especially if there's a lot of, you know, unanimity around this. Turf is still, in the grand scheme of things, a pretty recent invention. And I mean, the game was always played on grass in the past. I can see why people like it and all that. And it's honestly kind of annoying if you're a football player to have your surface changed to accommodate, you know, Taylor Swift. That's essentially what happens there. Is turf fields exist for cheapness and so that other events can take place there without doing damage. And I can see having some gripes over that, especially if you do consider your safety to be at risk. And if you do prefer it, and I kind of agree with that, it should be played on grass. It's an outdoor sport. But in terms of like the pure science of it, it's a little bit more up in the air. But I'd be annoyed if I was a player. I like playing on grass. I've run around on the turf field over at the high school here for some birthday parties that my son's friends have. And running on turf's weird, man. It just never feels quite right.
So, and I'm also jaded in that the only turf experience that I have is playing Ultimate Frisbee in the Silver Dome, which was outdoor carpet on top of concrete.
Yeah, that's
not turf.
No.
And it's like, well, Barry Sanders played on that his whole career.
And then he retired early.
Well, he retired early because the Lions suck. He didn't retire early because his knees hurt. He also wore basketball shoes. It was weird.
Yeah.
I think enough is, I mean, it's pretty clear that you don't want to be playing on AstroTurf, but I don't know. I mean, like you said, it's still fairly new, this type of field turf, and it's becoming universal at the high school level. I mean, almost everyone has it. That's a logistics thing more than a safety thing, because you can have all your youth games and, you know, three games a week if you need to, and band practice and not tear it up.
Yeah.
But I think once we get to that universal point in high schools, it'll be interesting to see. Will there be more lower extremity injuries on that surface in high schools? Like, there'll be a more data, and I think we'll get a better picture here.
Yep, agreed. All right,
that's it.
We're done. Okay, JR, anything to plug?
I don't think so. Just usual stuff at jsonline.com. You know, obviously Tom Silverstein, Pete Dorr, Cassidy Hill do a great job breaking down these games and coming up with a bunch of stories. The Packers podcast, the official podcast that we host, the Green 19 podcast, is something you should check out. They come out twice a week. Certainly the Brewers podcast that I run that comes out Monday mornings is always good. And we've got lots of Brewers content as they get closer and closer here to October. Their magic number dropped to 6 tonight to win the division. I believe it's 6 to get into the playoffs as well. Might be 5 depending on some things, but I think it's going to be 6. But still, they're very close. They're going to the playoffs. So it'll be good.
Yeah. And check out the microbrew. It's very good. You should definitely do that. Matt, anything? Going to do hot take again?
Sadly, there will not be content this week because if I started uploading YouTube video right now, it would probably finish by the time I get home on Friday.
Kansas Homa House would explode if you did that. Good call. So
yes, sir.
All right. So in the future, but not right now. As for me, my Shepherd Express wrap up of the last game is up right now, or should be. I will have something, I think, on AJ Dillon later this week, and I'm going to be on As Goes Wisconsin this Thursday at 11:30 to discuss the Packers. So check that out. Minipod will be on Friday, as always, previewing the Saints, who are kind of boring, but have their own level of fun. There's, you know, the fun parts about them are going to be that we get to face Taysom Hill, maybe playing more running back than normal. Michael Thomas, nice little comeback, and Derek Carr in a non-Raider situation. But yeah, stick around for that. Check that out. And Packers should have a better time this week, I think. And we'll be back next week to tell you how it went. So enjoy the game this week.
Those creatures jumped the barricades and headed for the sea.